Okay, we'll be going live here in just a moment on the video side. If you have any questions tonight, Ramona is with a daughter who had some surgery today. I have a special guest here with us tonight, a good friend I'll talk about in a moment. But just go ahead and text on the cell phone, 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181. Here, we're ready to go live. Okay, we're live tonight. Thank you. It's Tuesday night, celebration of life. It's great to have everybody with us. Thanks for taking this time. We're going to do everything in our power to make this a special occasion for you tonight. We're talking about the art of connection. I'd first of all like to introduce a guest who's with us tonight. Anna Gallman is here from California, dear friend.
Hello, everybody.
She said hello to everybody. Ramona is with our daughter who had some oral surgery today, and she's helping her out tonight. And it's great to have Anna here as a guest in her home. And it's always great when our friends come to visit. So, Anna, it's been a privilege to have you here. I've been coaching all day, and I've seen you wandering around the backyard and sitting here in my little garden outside the office. And I hope you had a wonderful time today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, here we go, everyone. It's time for us to jump into this. Every Tuesday night, we take on a new quality, one of the six qualities of an intentional creator. Last week, we started at the beginning. This is the art of connection. And we talked about just a couple things, just in brief review in preparation for tonight. We talked about first agape, the word agape. It's not agape love. We often say that. That's like saying love. This is a form of love. It's agape. It stands on its own. Agape means a heightened level of awareness. This is our ability to step back and see another person with clarity, without judgment, without bias, without prejudice, seeing their pricelessness and their uniqueness, being absolutely unconditional in our love toward them. This does require that we shift our focus from self to others. Because if it's how do they think I'm sounding, or how do I look, or what are they thinking about me, am I intelligent enough, am I articulate enough, whatever we might be thinking, we totally shift looking at the other person. We talked about this agape love, and it has three facets that we learn agape primarily during our trials, those furnace of adversity moments that we have. That when we're experiencing the rain or experiencing the darkness or the sadness or obstacles, that we learn agape by how we take those obstacles on. If we choose to learn from them, that's a heightened level of awareness. If we choose to show up in them in a way that we inspire others to take on their challenge, that's even a higher level of awareness. If we learn from them and then use them to more effectively serve another person, that's the highest level of awareness. These are the three forms of agape. We talked about the Chicago Dream, that we have all these experiences that would help us practice high levels of agape, but many of us are still dragging them around in a sack behind us. And so we want to take them out of the sack, put them in our heart, let go of the guilt, let go of the shame, and use them to serve another person. And that secret, remember, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Is anyone suffering from a similar wound? And we now use it as a lens, if you will, through which we can more clearly see what another person is experiencing. This allows us to listen with more intent, hear things other people wouldn't hear, ask questions other people may not consider asking. It creates a safe place. A person feels understood. Down come the walls of resistance. Out pours the cooperation and the productivity. Well, there are some specific steps we can follow, and that's our topic tonight. The topic is intrinsic validation. It's a big word. It just means that at a deep level, we're going to help a person feel valued. When they feel valued, they feel safe. They feel understood. Those words could almost all be synonymous. Valued, safe, understood. They feel that way. There's no more need for the walls of hate and suspicion which they built around their hearts. We know that everybody has this. I shared this last week in a non-adversarial relationship between good friends. A person holds back on average 40% of their cooperation until they feel valued, safe, understood. Can you imagine if it's an adversarial relationship, how much higher the walls are, how much more is even being held back? And when we can create this safe place where a person feels valued, safe, understood, the walls come down. So our objective, if we're going to connect with someone, is to not build a straw bridge. That would be a bridge built out of straw. That's something that will not support us in connection. It would collapse. We don't want to build straw bridges to people. We want to build real bridges, connection to them, so that our awareness can enter their soul, as Og says. We want to create connection with this person. What are some of the things that we can do to help us create connection? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. The first one is looking for what's important to this person. Looking for the good. This forces us to shift our focus from self to others. This will be the biggest shift. Because we're focused on us. Gosh, I want to feel understood. How will people know how much I've suffered? What challenges I've gone through? How difficult this has been if I let this go and focus on others? This could be the biggest challenge. So to assist us in doing that, we're going to start noticing. It's a great word, noticing other people. And we're going to start by noticing what's important to them. Now, I shared some stories in my book about this. Some of my favorites. You've got George, the waiter in Chicago, who had the pencil-thin beard and pencil-thin mustache. He comes to the table, and I just talked about this topic. So everybody at the table knew it, so we're kind of practicing. And someone mentions his beard and mustache and how difficult it must be to grow this. And he lit up. I'm convinced that George had been wearing this mustache, sporting this mustache for probably months and months. And I have no doubt we were probably the first ones to actually say something about it. Lots of people noticed it. Now, personally, I didn't care for the mustache or the beard. I wouldn't grow one like that. It was a little too hip and too young. It wouldn't work on me. But this wasn't about me. This principle is not about us. This practice we're going to do called intrinsic validation, where we're looking for the good, it's not about us. Can we see what's important to them? Now, there's a measurement in your assessment called compassion. It's not a measurement of do we or don't we have compassion. Com means to suffer with someone. So it's with someone that we suffer. That would be the right way to conjugate that verb. So we suffer with someone. With someone we suffer. Compassion. Quite often, we have so many things going on in our lives that we only see another person's suffering if it's greater than our own. That's pretty normal. It's like, I got a broken ankle. He's got a blister. Give me a break. Talked briefly about this last week. Well, this isn't about our broken ankle, because this is not about us. This agape love, this intrinsic validation is us focused on them. Can we see how important the blister is to them? That's so important that it's about them. And here's a clue. When we see it, it most likely will not be important to us. I don't want to have a tattoo. I don't care to grow that kind of a mustache. Those things aren't important to me. I don't want to drive a 20-year-old car, whether it's got chrome wheels or not. But to the person who just got it, it may be the best car they've ever driven. Can we see how important it is to them? Now, this isn't being fake or phony. This is finally being aware. We're awake to those around us. We're starting to see people and what's important to them. And part of this is noticing what they do that's good. Can we see it? And as importantly as seeing it, will we in fact verbalize it? Will we say something? Our challenge to you this week with this principle of looking for what's important to another person, looking for the good, and then verbalizing it, that we do this with everyone we meet. We look for the good. See what you can find. We all love it when someone notices something that's important to us. It's important to us. Lady, someone just spent 5 hours last Saturday buying that pair of shoes. Are we going to say something? They're not wearing those shoes for them. If they were, they'd certainly be wearing something more comfortable. They're wearing it. They want you to see it. They want to comment. Can we make the comment? So many people want to be noticed. And we might say, good grief, that's their job. Why should I say anything? They're supposed to be doing that. Well, it's not whether they're supposed to be doing it. It's can we see how important it is to them that we notice them doing it. Oh, get over it. That's ridiculous. That's childish. No, that's agape. That's agape. Can we see how important that is to the other person? Even if it's not important to us, even if we wouldn't behave that way, can we see how important it is to them? Oh, this is a key piece. Noticing. Noticing. Now, we know the body is built for us to actually feel what somebody else is feeling. It's built. Empathy is called the skin-bone barrier. We break through it. We actually can feel what another person is feeling. It happens through a process called mirror neurons, like mirror, mirror on the wall. When we are around a person, we have an overabundance of mirror neurons that generally reside in what's called the amygdala, which is our fight or flight center, through the optic center, not going through the thalamus. We're not creating pictures of this. This is just information flowing into the amygdala. It's like a highly developed radar system. It's picking up all kinds of sensory data, picks it up, sends a message to the brain. The brain releases molecules into the body, and we actually have a feeling. And all of this occurs before we have a conscious thought. It's that fast. Mirror neurons fire twice the speed of a normal neuron. So here we are noticing someone. Here we are showing up for someone. Here we are wanting to feel what they feel. What happens is we pick up that information. Molecules are released in our body, and we feel what that person is feeling. That's interesting. That's one side of it. The other side of the mirror neuron, we can't fake it till we make it. If we're going to be noticing people and then truly stepping on their path, and it's empathy, seeing something through their eyes, seeing what they see, feeling what they feel, we have to show up real and genuine and authentic. No hidden agendas. No hidden agendas. No agenda energy. We're showing up truly to serve them. We're showing up curious, interested, wanting to know what's really going on in their life. People have stories. There's very few listeners. We're going to become the listener. By listening, we pick up all this subtle information. We start to feel. It awakens our own intuition. Wow, I know that feeling. I've felt that before. What was I experiencing when I felt that? So we ask that question. We'll be surprised how close we are most of the time to what they're experiencing. Well, not quite. Okay, well, share with me what it's doing for you. Oh, it does this to me. Oh. We are built for this. This is how we are built. We are not built to be self-absorbing or self-absorbed. We're not built to be selfish. You can't peel enough layers of this onion away. You can't go deep enough into this black hole to find answers. They're not in there. When we will notice what's important to another person and verbalize it, when we'll start to listen to a person and feel what they're feeling and see what they're seeing and ask questions that validate it, the walls come down. Cooperation floods out. And we feel really joyful. This is how we get what we're trying to get. This is how we fill the void in our own soul. We don't get it by going in here. We get it by looking out there and by bringing our life experiences, perhaps our single greatest asset, to this process. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of fun things. I wrote about this in the book. If I had time, I'd read you the whole chapter. This is about the walls of resistance around people. And I ask, and I'll ask you tonight, to envision yourself in a rock fortress. This is your walls around you. And this story, I told the story of a man who, you know, he'd stick his head out the door and go, "I'm really tired." And all he'd hear back is, "Me too, me too, me too, me too." So he'd shut the door. "I'd like to do something tonight that's fun." "Me too, me too, me too, me too, me too, me too, me too." So he shuts the door. Nobody was listening. Everybody was commenting about their own circumstance. But one day, he made the choice to step outside the door and stand in front of his rock hut. And he noticed one right next to him. And then he saw the door open, and this voice said, "I'm really tired tonight." And before he commented, he recognized the voice. It was his wife. And he said, "Tell me more about that." And she opened the door and ushered him into her world. And he sat down and listened. Cooperation and productivity flooded out. Connection occurred. He listened. He watched the magic of having someone's door open, a verbal hint. This is how we process as humans. You know, "Gosh, the kids were up all night last night. I just didn't get much sleep." "Yeah, me either, because I wasn't da-da-da." Blah, 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 blah. Two people talking about themselves, calling it a conversation. The principle we're learning in this process is that we listen when the door opens, we hear a verbal hint, we ask questions such as, or make comments such as, "Tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. I'm listening." This is a lost art. I'm listening. Coaching session this morning with a client. The sexiest thing a man can do is listen to a woman. Without trying to fix them, without trying to give advice, just listen. Well, this man gets the idea. Wow, I wonder if this is true of anywhere else. So he steps out of his wife's castle, her rock fortress, and thanks her. She feels understood. Wow, it's peaceful. He's standing out here, and he looks out over the landscape, and he sees it dotted with thousands, thousands, and thousands of these little rock fortresses. Wow. So he goes on a little journey. And he walks, stands by a fortress and watches for a door to open and a verbal hint. And when he hears it, he says, "Well, tell me more about that." He's ushered right in. Sits down. Walls come down, cooperation, productivity flood out. Goes to the next house, he listens, watches for a door to open, steps in. Spent the whole day connecting with people. Had a glorious experience. In the book I tell the story that he listened to a husband and wife having a conversation. Husband came home and said, "What's for dinner?" And the wife said, "Could we go out and have something someplace?" "Oh, no, I want to stay home for the football game. Did you hear Harry's getting a divorce, Marilyn Harry getting a divorce? Oh, gosh, I'm glad our marriage is strong." Two people talking to each other, both of them in their own solo fortress. Then she says, "Did you hear that?" You know, she said something like, "Gosh, is there any way we could get away this summer and go to Tahiti to stay in one of those huts with the glass floor and it's romantic?" He says, "Yeah, so long as I could bring my golf clubs with me." Then she says, "Did you hear that Harry has a new girlfriend already?" "Oh, boys will be boys." Man hears a door slam, something being thrown against the wall. What is her problem? This guy's standing out watching this conversation. Husband and wife, fortresses next to one another, neither one of them stepping into the other person's fortress. Oh, this is so tragic. We see this all the time. It's not just in working relationships where someone needs to be right and someone else needs to be wrong. It's in committed relationships. We've got two fortresses, people yelling over the top at each other, and nobody really listening. We have a woman in this example who's devastated. best friends are getting a divorce. He's already got a new girlfriend. This guy's in his own cocoon, more worried about Monday Night Football than he is her. She's starting to wonder, gosh, have I got the same problem? Anyway, this guy who is watching this happen decides to go home, and he plays out in his mind a different outcome. I'm home. Oh, sweetheart, I've had a really long day. Man walks out of his fortress, comes to the door that's open, and said, well, share with me what happened. And he sits down and listens. She shares her concerns. He hears them. He makes the comment, what's your greatest concern about our relationship? And this conversation ends with the two of them just holding each other. Now, I was telling this story a long, long time ago on a Saturday morning coaching call, and a lady from Hawaii came off of mute and said, David, men don't do that. I went, wow, what an indictment. Men, is that true? We don't do that? We don't listen? We don't step into our wife's world? Tell me more about that. Share with me. Ann's over here chuckling, so apparently we don't. But we don't. We need to be right. We got our own feelings, and we don't feel valued. And what would happen if we lift and we build and we listen? Now, ladies, it doesn't hurt for you to listen either, because obviously this guy was tied up, more worried about playing golf. Can we see how important that is to him? Can we see what's important to the other person? Can we listen for the verbal hints? Because human beings, by nature, send out little telescope messages. Yeah, it's been a little rough today. And we go, what? Yeah, here too. Or do we say, share with me? And we step into their world and stay there till the walls come down, till cooperation floods out. Can we do this? We learn how to listen based on taking those things out of our sack that we've been dragging around, holding them up here in our heart, so that we listen through our own experiences. Oh, we are so similar. We are so similar. Somebody once said, if we got around a circle and confessed our sins, we would laugh at a lack of originality. It's probably true. We are so similar. Can we listen? If we will create this safe place, we can bless the lives of many. Now, in context of this, I'm just going to open my book for a moment. This is so fun. When we're creating this safe place, I want to go to a page, if I may, bear with me just for a moment. So we're going to want to be watching for these doors to open. Is everybody working on this? Want to listen? I'll tell you a story. Well, there it is. I mentioned a moment ago that we have so many stories and so few listeners. So few listeners. And our mission as an intrinsic validator is to become a great listener. Reflect on this question with me. Some of you have heard me ask it before, but reflect on it. When was the last time someone cared enough about you to listen without needing to fix you or give you advice? And they did so until you felt understood. When's the last time that happened? If you're on the phone and you got somebody like that, text it to me, 801-541-9181. If you're on the video, go on to your Ustream chat room and just write it down. Tell us, oh my goodness, these are so rare. They're so rare. I've asked that question over 3,500 times to coaching clients. I can't remember on two hands stories. I can remember, but I don't remember more than maybe 5 to 10 stories. And the stories are always phenomenal, and they didn't always just happen. Some of them happened years before, and people still remember the person who listened. I learned this lesson back in the days when I was shooting television commercials, specialized with direct response television. And you can tell when someone does a testimonial on one of those programs. And you know if it's scripted. You know if it's fake. You know, even if it's a good actor delivering, they deliver with great bravado, and it just falls flat. It hasn't got a soul. It hasn't got a life force to it. Spontaneous real testimonials aren't very smooth, but they're extremely powerful because you know they're real. Well, that's what we specialized in. Now, I want you to picture yourself thinking about this all night. You've been invited to come and do a testimonial for your favorite product, something you purchase, use, and you just love it. And you know the next day they're going to ask you about it. So what are you thinking about all night? Most people are thinking about what they could say, how they could say it. See if they could say it in a way that it's smooth and comfortable. And then they come to the set. And there I am sitting almost knee to knee with them. All these lights around. They've been in makeup. They've signed waivers. There's a craft services table. There's a camera operator. There's a sound engineer. There's a producer. And here we are sitting side knee to knee. I'm not on camera. And I'm going to ask them a question. And they're going to respond. My sole mission is to help them feel valued, safe, and understood. That's it. I'm not here to feed them lines. I'm to create such a safe place that the walls will come down and the words will just flow out like water. I've watched directors do this for years. Now say this. No. Say it this way. Da 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 da. Would you say it that way, please? Okay, now change this word up. And they're doing that for an hour with someone, driving them batty. And what they're getting is a whole bunch of scripted dialogue. I didn't want that. So they would sit down, and didn't matter what I asked them, first question, they always delivered the line they've been memorizing all night long. So we get through that process. And when they're done, I would do what I'm going to ask you to do this week. Count 1-1,000, 2-1,000, 3-1,000 when they finish talking. So I didn't say anything. Just lean in. Sometimes people say, well, what do you want me to say? So I'd ask a question. Most would downshift from left brain to right into their heart. And it was quite often their comment would start with, what I'm really trying to say is, and they would deliver this spontaneous, heartfelt comment. Now, some people, it took a little bit longer for them to get comfortable. Our mission when we're listening to a person is for them to feel valued, safe, and understood. Are we listening to understand, or are we listening to respond? Almost everyone listens to respond. I know I do it still. If I'm not conscious, I'm listening to respond. We get into a heated political battle or some kind of discussion with all my sons-in-law, it gets crazy. Everybody's just bang, 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 bang. That's okay. Those are debate moments. But in connection with a human being, we want to be listening to understand. So we're going, I wonder what they meant by that. Ooh, what does that mean? We're not assuming and then fixing. Not assuming and giving advice. We're not jumping in the first time they breathe. That doesn't make us safe. That's what everybody else does. What we do is listen. When they finish, silence is our friend. What that says is, you're safe with me. I'm not going to pounce on you like a fox on a mouse. I'm actually listening. Wow. Yeah. You can almost feel their shoulders go, wow. You've been through this, Anna. Oh, I mean, I can really talk? Somebody really wants to hear the story? Yeah, share with me. What happened? Well, I've never told anybody this, but you'll hear that all the time if you're a good listener. And someone will begin to share. We are safe. Now, to help us in becoming safe, there are two pieces. Safe in that we are listening. We're not going to jump in. That's the first half. We create a safe place. We're safe, and we create a safe place by the questions that we ask. The questions are born out of our experience. They're not scripted. They float to the surface. So we're listening. As we're gaining a greater understanding, if we have any frame of reference, we have an idea. Gosh, does this ever happen when you're there? Have you ever done this before? You ever felt this? Oh, yeah. Well, tell me more about that. And the person is feeling increasingly safe, increasingly valued, increasingly understood. This is a key part of intrinsic validation. You can't do this if you've got an agenda. Your purpose is just to sell them something? It won't work. They'll feel it. This is an opportunity for us to listen. When a person feels safe, walls are down, cooperation floods out, we could very literally shake their hand, thank them for sharing, and part. We will have left them better than we found them. That's our mission. Leave them better than we found them. Now, that's just the first half of intrinsic validation. Before we go to the second half, I want to give you some dangerous landmines. As we're listening, we're being safe, creating a safe place by asking empathetic questions. We may be tempted to change our direction should someone make a caustic, hurtful, harmful statement to us. We just got injured. Someone throws that spear at us, or arrow at us, we want to throw back a spear. Then they'll throw back a rocket, and we'll throw back a bomb. So, arrow, spear, rocket, bomb. Everybody been in one of those conversations before? Arrow, spear, rocket, bomb. Till someone gets their feelings hurt, nobody talks to each other for a couple of days, and they come back and they apologize. Until next time. Arrow, spear, rocket, bomb. When someone says something sarcastic, if we're practicing agape love, we might ask, wow, wonder what's going on in their world today. Wonder why they're so upset. Well, share with me what's happening. Can you feel that peaceful comment? I'm not taking the arrow into my heart. Og gives us the instruction because we're studying Scroll 2. I will wear love as my shield to repulse the arrows and spears of hate and anger. I will turn them into the softest of rain. Softest of rain. In other words, innocuous, harmless. I'm not going to let it into my heart. Heck, if that thing makes it past my shield, like I don't have my awareness up, that's agape love. Agape, I've got my shield. I'm going to wear it as a shield. If I don't have my shield up, I'm not aware, somebody hits me in the heart with that arrow, you pull out the arrow, you put poison on it, and you send it back as a spear. They put poison on it, they send it back as a rocket. You put a nuclear warhead on it, and you send it back as a bomb. That's just how it works till somebody gets injured. So sarcastic comments, just be prepared. If we're conscious, if we're awake, if we're really feeding our soul a scroll too, when those moments happen, we just go, wow. Wonder what's happening. We're interested, we're curious, we step into their world. This next landmine is so common. I struggle with this one. Oh, this is so hard. Somebody's telling a story, and they prick a memory of a story of an experience you've had, and it was such a cool experience. So we prematurely jump in and start telling our story. I want you to observe people having a conversation as a third party, and watch when someone starts to tell a story. The other person, watch their eyes light up. Oh, I've been to Hawaii too. Bam, they're on top of them as soon as they breathe, telling their story about Hawaii. And the other person is sitting there, like, frozen. Glassy eyes, not knowing how to respond. This is a great thing to know. This is not when we tell our stories, because this is not about us. There will be a time when we can in the process, but it is not yet. We do not want to be prematurely telling our stories. What we do is we take someone by the nape of the neck, we yank them out of their fortress, over the bridge, into our world, set them down, tell them our story, grab them by the nape of the neck, outside, over the bridge, into their house, sit them down. Okay, now keep telling me yours. You can do that maybe once. Maybe once. But you do it twice and you'll ruin communication and connection. So don't prematurely tell your stories. There's a place for them. But not yet. Shortcuts. Shortcuts are saying things like, oh, I understand where you are. I understand. If we understand, we know the question to ask. If we don't know the question to ask, we do not yet understand. That's just a shortcut. We pay dearly for those shortcuts. If we don't know the question, we don't yet know. We miss the target with our empathetic questions. Gosh, I've had that experience. We're thinking, I wonder if this has ever happened. So we ask and they say, no, that doesn't happen. We can lose confidence in the moment. Don't. It's not about you. Well, how does that show up for you? And it's about one notch off. And they'll share with you what it is. So don't get too concerned about missing the mark with an empathetic question when you're creating that safe place. The dreaded brain freeze. Oh, this is when we're listening and we don't know what to say. We're just, all of a sudden our brain just freezes. We're not used to this focusing on someone else. We're used to talking and responding and interrupting. And all of a sudden we got a brain freeze, really simply. A couple things we can say, like, I'm just listening. I'm listening. That'll keep it going. Tell me more about that. Or a minute ago you mentioned, could you say more about that, please? That's how we get past the dreaded brain freeze. We just get back into the process of listening. There's two more. Next one is it takes too long. I remember my old days, and Ann, you probably remember these. You're a bit younger than me, but maybe you remember the Fram oil filter days when the guy would say, yous can pay me now or yous can pay me later. In other words, you put a good filter on the car now and filter the oil, or you let the engine burn up and you pay him to replace the engine. When we try to speed the process up because it's taking too long, we end up in damage control in that connection, especially if we eventually want to share something with the person. If we are in sales and we're now listening to understand, to see if there's any purpose for us sharing our product, if we're in that space, we just want to get to the products and we try to shortcut, we will be in damage control, guaranteed. No agenda yet. There's no agenda yet. This is a agendaless conversation. We just want to understand where they are. Have the walls come down, cooperation flood out. The last one is too broad a context. This is a common one, especially if we're selling a product. Sometimes we can be dishonest. We sit down at lunch with someone, and maybe we're in a home-based business, for example. We sell a product, a nutritional product, for example. And we sit down, we start off with this wide context. So tell me about your life. I got my hands spread wide out if you're on the telephone. Way out here. And so we're playing in a very wide field with these rules. Looking for the good, verbalizing it, listening for a door, stepping into their world, listening until we create a safe place. We're practicing all these things. But an hour and a half into the conversation, we're ready to go, and we want to share something. And so we drop the leaded balloon. The lead balloon. And it's like, you know, the reason why I asked you to lunch was, you mean all this was just setting me up for this? That's how people feel. It's uncomfortable. Narrow the context. The reason why I invited you to lunch today is I want to explore your experience with nutritional supplementation. Have you ever taken supplements? Tell me about your experience. All rules apply, just a narrow context. This is a wonderful way to discover because you're not out here in the periphery. You're right here in the area you want to be the sweet spot. You just narrow the context, but you truly are interested in what's important to them. You truly are listening and stepping into their world. You are creating a safe place in this narrower context. That's a beautiful place to be. Well, this is a moment of decision. Say, for an example, we do sell something. Or we want to enroll somebody in a vision. Or we want them to participate in an activity. We've created this safe place. The walls are down. Cooperation has flooded out. Now, what do? We could walk away, remember? Shake their hands. We left them better than we found them. But in this process of agendaless conversation, truly wanting to know what's going on in their life, we discovered some things that were really important to them. Let's say, for an example, your product addresses inflammation. And you find out they've got really sore knees and they're struggling with energy. You've got a product that deals with energy. I have a solution. Gosh, I love what I do. I love what it's done for me. I love what it's done for other people. I could really bless their lives with this. This is a moment of decision. Because now we have a reason to share. We're not just giving advice. They truly feel understood. They feel valued. They feel safe. With walls down, we can have a conversation. In the book, I tell a story of a dream that I had where I was having a conversation with someone. The walls were down. They felt safe, understood. And they wanted me to go move their sailboat. We're on the top of a mountain. This man was in an emotional prison, couldn't move. And way down at the bottom of the mountain, there was the water and a little harbor. And their little sailboat was in that harbor and wanted me to move his sailboat to a safe place. And I said I would do it. So I went down and moved his sailboat from harbor to harbor to harbor. I remember the harbor, the last harbor. Beautiful, clear water, safe. Looking at this and going, this is where I would put my boat. This is it. I felt confident. I could feel it in the fibers of my being. There was a commitment. And I remember walking back up the mountain. I remember him being able to see me. I reflected later about mirror neurons. He could read my posture. He could read my facial expressions. When I began to talk, the tone and tenor of my voice, he knew. It's not magic. There is an energy component, because when molecules are released in the body and the cells open up their receptors, molecule communicates via energy. It's an energy exchange. So it is truly energy that we feel. He felt at peace. He knew that what I was sharing with him was true, that I truly had put his boat in a safe place. I woke up. And I remember lying in bed reflecting on this. What does this all mean? That's when it hit me. His sailboat was his dream. He did not have the power to move his dream somewhere else. He didn't know where it should go. But he trusted me that I did. So he asked me to move his sailboat to a safe place. And I did. Before we share what we think is important, let us make sure that it truly will bless their lives. That we would put our hopes and dreams in the same place we're going to ask them to put theirs. This is a key piece. And once that decision's been made, yeah. Then the next decision is it the right time? Is this enough for today? Is this person ready to hear? If they are, right now. If not, we schedule another time. But if they are ready to hear, we're going to, this is the visual, we're in their world, right? Take them by the arm. There's some ideas I'd like to share with you that could help you address this concern and this concern. You mentioned this one to me. How important is it that this one be resolved? Oh, just occupying my mind day and night. I think I have an answer for that. May I show it to you? Well, sure. Take them by the arm. We walk out onto their porch, pick up our agenda. We didn't take it in with us. We walk over into our world, and we sit down in our world with them. We open up our briefcase, our agenda, and we pull out our stories. And we share. Not everything. What they need to know to address their problem. It's called gaining agreement. It's honoring this person. We don't want to make an assumption. It's not our right to make it. You shared this. You said this is really important. I have a solution, I believe, that could work. Would you be open? That's gaining agreement. Yes. Then we share. And as we're sharing, there's a very good chance that we may have missed something through the conversation and an objection comes up. Interestingly, objections are not questions that demand answers. They're generally statements that demand a question. Well, I'm not really good at that, or I don't like going door-to-door raising money for the heart fund. I can't talk to people. Oh. Have you ever tried that before? Yes. What was your experience like? How long have you been dealing with this? How painful has it been every time you face this challenge? You want to leave this planet with the challenge? If not, would this be a good time to take it on? Yeah, I guess so. Okay. The simplistic, but just an idea. So we don't answer objections. We ask questions to understand. We step back into their world to see what's the story behind the objection. Now, some people say, well, some people just give you objections to get the conversation over with and move you on your way. If that's happening at this point in intrinsic validation, we have cut a corner somewhere. We haven't really, truly reached a point of understanding where walls come down and cooperation flood out. There's still walls up, and we're trying to pretend like they're down. They're not down, if that's the objection. So let's go back and reexamine how we've approached it thus far. Because the objection should be pretty substantive at this point. Just ask questions. Most people can answer their own objections if they can be answered. And if we truly want to present something that's in their best interest, we won't be trying to sell something if we sell something they cannot pay for. Unless we have a concrete way for them to do so. Let us bless their life. Now we get to this point. If we're selling, they call it the close. And most people are involved in products that are not commodities. We're not selling milk at the grocery store. It's a relationship. Everything we've done to this point is determining whether we want to and they want to work with us. In other words, we're deciding whether we want to work together. This is a beginning. It's not a close. It's a beginning. Are you ready to begin? Oh. What do we do? This, and this. Let's start with this. It's a beginning. I've been going through this process with you so that we could determine whether we want to be on this journey together. And almost every major purchase would fit into that category. Is the car you want? Is the dealership? We want a relationship with you forever. We want this to be so positive that you love this car, and when it's time to get a new one, you'll go no place but here. That's what we want. It's beginning. If everything's a close and it's finalized, that means every time we're selling something, we're starting over from scratch. In most businesses, we want to get to some kind of a relationship where we don't have to start over every time we do something. Otherwise, it's a tough business. So let's not get into closes. How about if we start getting into beginnings? Would you like to begin? Lastly, and last thing I'll mention tonight, this concept of looking for what's important to a person and verbalizing it, watching for a door to open, listening for a verbal hint, stepping into their world, listening, being safe, creating a safe place by asking empathetic questions, having the walls come down, the cooperation flood out, and a new moment of decision where we decide whether or not what we have would really serve them, and if it's the right time, we gain agreement and we share. This is not for the soft of heart. This is not for the faint of heart, I should say. This is not a soft sale. We are simply respecting a person. This isn't in lieu of talking about something. This isn't a way to manipulate. This is a way to respect, understand, to truly serve. There will be times when you step into someone's world and the clarity you get, which is the purpose for this, to gain clarity, that you're going to find you're dealing with a rattlesnake. And one thing you do not want to do is put a rattlesnake in your sleeping bag. Because you do. And you climb in, it will bite you. Because that's what rattlesnakes do. This isn't about naive kindness. It's about accuracy. Can I care enough about a person to truly put myself on their path, empathy, stand on their path, truly know where they are, truly understand what they're going through, and then determine if anything I have could serve them, gain agreement and share confidence and respect. Beautiful way to live. This is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. Focusing on another human being with agape, a heightened level of awareness, listening with agape, asking questions with agape. It's no longer about us. We can't be offended. It's not about us. Let us practice this with a new level of energy. For some, it's a new way of living. That's okay. The rewards you'll receive can keep you coming back to do it over and over again. You'll know when you don't. You know the challenges that are created. So continue practicing intrinsic validation. This is on the phone today with Scott, who's in the book, Scott Irwin. When I taught these principles to him the first time, he said, "Dave, how many people know this?" And I said, "There are a few." And he said, "Can we keep this to ourselves?" He knew the power. Scott reports on a regular basis. When he said, "I have made and saved millions of dollars using these principles," he means it. He sells pipe in Texas. He works with crusty old cowboys from West Texas. And he intrinsically validates them. And he is something to behold. May we follow that example and do so and have great success in our lives. As Og said, "Until I master this art, I'm no more than a peddler in the marketplace." And that's not very fun. Okay, scroll number two. Take this on this week. Next week, we're going to come back and talk about mental creation, the first of two stages of creation, using our vivid visualization constructively to get inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges. This will be a fun conversation. Come, even if you've been through this a few times, I know some of you are still struggling with fantasy, and more so today with discouragement. Let me help you get out of that discouragement so you're not going there anymore, so that you could use your mind constructively. Use this gift to ignite your passion and drive your actions. We don't have a moment to waste. Let's do this together. Be back.